Thanks for finding Organic Matters. Glad you keep coming back. Gives me something to do, and I'm always meeting a few new people every week. So for this part of the show, I'm going to talk about which fruit and vegetable preservation method is right for you. I mean, is it freezing? Is it canning? Is it dehydrating? Let's go through that and let you make some decisions that you think will work best for you. I've used them all, depending on, and I've not done it as much now that I'm by myself. Family's grown and all that, but I still definitely used to love the techniques of preserving the food that it sometimes took all summer to grow. So it'd be pitiful if you don't take advantage of it when it's available. But whether you're a brand new or a veteran farmsteader or a farmer, you're probably at least somewhat acquainted with the different preservation methods. I hope most everyone has at least frozen produce, and many have dabbled in dehydrating or water canning methods. But are you aware of all the different preservation methods out there? And I'm going to try to give you at least my rundown on the pluses and the minuses of each one and see which one kind of fits you the best. Let's start off with a little short rundown of the most popular methods of preserving food. Back 50 years ago, my mother's favorite was always just water canning, water bath canning, they called it. But there is also pressure canning. Of course, freezing is much more popular now. Having a big freezer back then was almost unheard of for a lot of people. Drying, pickling, oh, love fermentation. Lactofermentation, probably my favorites. Then there's some of the real old-fashioned ways like salt curing, fat preservation, and smoking. But for right now, let's concentrate on what I call the easier, or at least the more popular methods. Let's start with talking about canning, freezing, and dehydrating or drying foods. So beginning with fruit and vegetable preservation methods, let's talk a bit about canning. Whether it's jellies or relishes or salsas, sauces of any kind. And when I was out on the ranch, I also was taught by a very old gentleman, became a friend of mine, how to can venison and even his soups and beans, which I had never ever come across before that. The upside is they're so handy and the storage is really stable. You don't have to worry about a power outage or a lack of freezer space. They're super easy to make up a quick meal with, or maybe take along with you on a camping trip or when you're traveling. The downside is it's a bit of a pain in the, let's call it a bit of a labor-intensive job to get it prepared and getting the whole canning process going. The jars do need to be kept in dry, dark storage and must have new lids each time, and I've learned that the hard way. You take a reused lid, it just is not as dependable. Still, this is a wonderful way to keep your harvest delicious all year at a very low cost, since a canner will last a lifetime and the jars and rings are reusable and less damaged, but the new caps should go on there each time you put can something new. Remember, there's two different types of canning now, and you must use the safest one for the particular food. There is some difference. I personally trusted and preferred use of my pressure canner to water bath, which also happened to end up saves you a heck of a lot of storage space. And one of the rules you might want to remember is you never can low acid foods with just the water canner method. If it's a low acid food, you really must use pressure can method. You're not pressure cooking the food, you just use the pressure canner. If you don't have a pressure canner, I think the best option nowadays is actually freezing your food. Well, obviously, for freezing your food, you're going to need a freezer. Both upright freezers and chest freezers are available. Uprights can help reduce how much floor space you use. You will need freezer bags, good ones, place, or bowls, or even I use canning jars if I have them around a lot of time, especially for my jams and things. And just a note here on the side, believe it or not, freezers are more efficient when they're full. If you buy a freezer and you're only going to put 5 pounds of meat in and sit there, you're really wasting money. But if you've got everything you can put away, a number of vegetables, fruits, everything, it becomes a cold sink, let's call it that, instead of a heat sink. And now freezers are much more efficient than they've ever been, and in real dollars, much less expensive. A little caveat to freezing is most vegetables will require some kind of blanching to preserve the taste and texture. Fruits can be a lot of times frozen without blanching, but can benefit from a soak in a solution of lemon juice. It just keeps the color and everything up. And water, of course, to preserve the color as you freeze them. Meat should be well wrapped, and all food should have as much air removed as possible to prevent deterioration. in the modern world that we're here now, I happen to have a really decent, and they're not really expensive anymore, vacuum sealer. They've gone down in price. The new bags that you can buy for them, you can either make the bags or buy them pre-made. And they're really even more efficient than the really good freezer bags you can buy, which have triple seals and all that. But this vacuum sealer does an even better job than that. And if you're real careful, you can use the bags a few times. Snip the inch off, get out what you want, shorten the bag a little bit and use it two or three times. It's safe and it works well. And yes, freezing is convenient and offers high quality produce, but it's a little bit more expensive, at least initially getting going. And definitely, here's the problem, and this has happened twice in my life. If your electricity goes out, you're in trouble. I had mine go out when I was on a trip, and when I came back, I had an entire freezer full of ruined food. So be very careful about that. The good side of the freezer, if it's done properly, it keeps your food for a long time and keeps it nutritionally very valuable for you. So they're probably worth definitely worth the investment if you're a hometown gardener. Next on my list is dehydrating. Drying food can be an excellent option to reduce space used and maintain a good quality of food when done properly. We hydrate fruit like when they make chips and herbs and seeds and jerky. Many people also dry vegetables, sauces, and more. All you need is a dehydrator or even an oven that can go low enough. A lot of people don't now. My current dehydrator has six kind of rectangular trays. It's easy to clean. It takes care of itself. It's got its own timer. It's kind of a set and forget it kind of thing. Many vegetables benefit from a quick blanch before dehydrating, and fruits are often helped. Again, back to my lemon juice bath that I like. Dried foods take up a tiny amount of space compared to all other methods. I'm big on making my own jerky. Back when I was having an unlimited supply of venison, it was one of my favorite things to make to even give out as gifts. It's quite inexpensive and easy to do, really easy. Well, I really don't certainly want to always dry all my food, but it does make an excellent addition to, I call it my preservation or preserving toolbox, something else to fall back on. The last few minutes of this show, let's talk a little bit about one more advanced method of taking care of your food, and that's either pickling or what's called lactofermentation. And again, you have to decide which preservation method is good depending on what you're making, whether you want to pickle something or actually make a kraut or something. So I'll delve into enough to give you a feel for it. Let's start with pickling. Basically, pickling is preserving a food in acid, such as vinegar. That's the most often in white or apple cider. I've used both. Some people do use salt water for certain pickling methods. I use vinegar in my pickling almost all the time. You can pickle a ton of foods. Relishes, cucumbers. I love pickled eggs. I like my pickled eggs in beet juice, believe it or not. And my dad's favorite many years ago, which I don't even see anymore, was pickled pig's feet. There's tons of different pickling recipes out there. Go around and experiment. Do you find the one that fits you the best? Prepare your produce by chopping it. Usually try to make it about the same size as all of it. Make sure you're using good produce. Wilted, overripe, or diseased food should really be avoided if you're going to take the time to pickle it. If the recipe you're using calls for a brine, prepare this and allow your food to soak in it. And they usually give you a time period. Then drain and add the hot vinegar, salt, or whatever you're doing, water mixture, as it tells you. They're very simple recipes. Put the brine food in jars and allow it to sit for whatever time. Sometimes it's a few days, sometimes it's a few weeks. And then you can either refrigerate it or can it for a longer-term storage. So you got a little bit of both methods going on there. As an example, I'll often take peppers, hot or sweet, whichever I've got, slice them in even slices before placing them in a jar. After packing, I fill the jar with vinegar and put a lid on it and refrigerate it. These are absolutely delicious in place with store-bought pepper rings. They really are much better on your homemade nachos than anything you can buy in the store. However, if you're going to want to store them out of your refrigerator, you're going to need to go back to your water bath canning method for 10 minutes. They'll keep in your refrigerator for months just as they are, though. You can also prepare onions like this and use a refrigerator cucumber pickle recipe also. Now let's talk about one of my favorites. It's a little bit more involved, but it's fun and boy do you get some good food. It's called lactofermentation. Lactofermentation is just a little bit different from what quick pickling is. To lactoferment, you will need, of course, whatever vegetable you're going to use. I find some good non-iodized quality salt. You need some kind of a weight. You need a crock pot or something to put it in. I use big giant gallon and sometimes even 2 gallon glass jars. Or you can buy actual fermentation jars. And if you want to get fancy, you can even buy airlocks. And there's actually airlocks, weights, and seals all sold together. There's even it's called Fermin Tools. You can go look it up. I kind of just use what I got, a plate and a rock. And anyway, I tried these other things out. They are neat. If you're going to do a lot of it, the little kit you buy is much more convenient and maybe a bit more sanitary. But I like the old-fashioned method. For cabbage, we'll start there because this is what got me started on to make sauerkraut. You will shred your cabbage. I hand shred it. Some people use food processors. I prefer to hand cut it myself. Then mix it with salt. Pack it tightly into the jar or your crock pot if you have it. And make sure you lick it. This is the secret, the one secret. Make sure your liquid is completely covering all of the cabbage or whatever you're doing. You can do other veggies, but it's got to be on top of it. The air shouldn't hit your sauerkraut to be. Then you place a weight on top of that. And if you're being fancy, you get one of these airlocks. They're a very simple device. Or you can just, I can tightly wrap mine with plastic and put a towel over it. But the thing you got to do to make this work well is every day check just to make sure that all that stuff's under the liquid. If it's not submerged fully, push it down, add more brine, add water, whatever it takes. Make sure it is submerged. My basic recipe is about 1.5 tablespoons or so of salt for every good-sized head of cabbage. I don't really measure this. If I add liquid, I use about 1 teaspoon of salt to every 2 cups. I always make it into cold water. I stir it and make sure it's cold, and then I pour it till it's definitely covering whatever I'm trying to fermentate. Just as an aside, if you really like strong flavors, try fermentating some cauliflower. It's a very interesting taste. You'll love it or hate it. I personally store my ferments or my fermented foods in the fridge most of the time. But if you have a cool storage location, in the old days, they just didn't do that. You can use it, set them out. It's also a matter of personal taste. How long you let them ferment makes a difference. A good rule of thumb is to check them out after 3 days and see if you like the flavor. If it's too green, let it go a little longer. If the sourness level is right, then take off the weight, start enjoying it. Do bear in mind, the longer you let it sit out like that, though, the more flavor, we'll call it, that it gets. Both these methods are a fantastic way to add delicious fruits and vegetables to your diet and a great way to preserve your harvest. And I will tell you, you'd think the salt would be a problem, but no, you can always rinse that off after if you don't want that much salt in your diet. Still makes great sauerkraut. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.